Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, adventures in tactical shooting stuff, training. I don't know. I really needed to say something more intelligent there, and I didn't. Totally flubbed it. At facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, MJ? No.
This is getting old, by the way. You need to come up with something or just call me Melody.
All right. It's Melody Lauer. Melody, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good.
I'm tired.
Well, you know, it's been a whirlwind 2 days. No, something. Anyway, we've got all sorts of cool stuff that we've been up to, and we will tell you about that in just a minute. But hey, before that, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition and LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, that's a Back to the Future reference. If I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never really have too much ammo. So, hey, we got to jump out of airplanes with the U.S. Army parachute team. That was pretty cool, right?
That was extremely cool. That was very cool.
Did you dig that?
I did. I didn't think I was going to. It was one of those things I really wasn't all that excited to do. But then after about the third time of involuntarily being, like, thrown out of an airplane,
I think
it grows on you.
I don't think they, like, tricked you into strapping yourself to
No, and it's one of those things that, honestly, I would have done even if I really didn't want it, because I didn't want to be a, you know, one of those people who's like, no, I'm not going to do something cool and amazing.
Thank you for not saying a five-letter word on the radio. I appreciate it. Well, hey, thanks to John, Rich, and Jen out at the Golden Knights. We really had fun and appreciated the opportunity to help them out with some of the stuff they were doing. So that was super cool. I, too, liked it. I did not like the parachute opening, because apparently when you're fat and you decelerate from 145 miles per hour, it hurts.
Just so now you're going to get a text message that's going to be like, well, actually, you were falling at.
Yeah. Anyway. Hey, guess what?
What's that?
Daryl Bulkey's here. Daryl, how's it going?
Yes. Good. I'm not really there.
Well, you're here in spirit, right? I mean, you're semi-engaged. I haven't lost you yet, but man, it's been a while since you've been on the show. It's been like a year, hasn't it?
Something. Mm. Well, but it's not like we've been a year without each other. We've done other venues.
No,
just not the show.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, we got to hang out with each other in Texas. That was cool.
Yeah, unfortunately, you were wearing women's underwear when I last saw you, which was a little disturbing, and I still trying to get over that.
I was only wearing a women's bra. I was not wearing women's underwear.
I have some news for you, John. That's still women's underwear.
Is it?
I think that still counts.
Well, I ain't scared. So, no, that was actually...
Apparently, he needs to be educated on what women's underwear are.
You know what? I'm not going to give the listeners any context here at all. Yeah, I put a pink bra on. There was a gun involved. Caleb Causey from Lone Star Medic sat on top of me. Deal with it.
Which is even more disturbing.
Well,
it was like I was the only large bearded man not involved in the whole underwear thing. So,
I mean,
sometimes you just got to know when to leave.
I was just so
that was enough for me.
Yeah.
You know what's worse is apparently alcohol wasn't involved.
Oh no. No,
they were stone cold sober. That's all. I don't even want to think what happened when the alcohol got involved later.
Well, so the best part of that was, hey, here's this bra. I'm like, cool. And then I'm like, Caleb, come sit on top of me. He's like, okay. And so yeah, anyway, but you know what? I'm not providing any more context for anybody. The listeners are just going to have to guess what happened. It was for science, though. For those that don't know, man, who are you? What do you do? What did you do? And then we'll hop right into today's topic for the show.
Reader's Digest. Been in the gun industry since I was, like 21 years old. Ended up being a cop for almost 20 years in SoCal. Spent 17 of that training the SWAT team. Part of my duties was as a firearms instructor assigned to SWAT and armor, and then also did all the firearms and ballistics work up on officer-involved shootings, which I did over 75 of those. All the firearms training, I ended up with the whole department at one point. Cut my teeth pretty extensively with the guys out at LAPD, which is a huge influence to me to watch how professional guys, that old crew at the LAPD SWAT guys, were really at the cutting edge of a lot of this stuff. After I retired, I went ahead and I was injured in the line of duty in a violent encounter, or actually a pair of them back to back. Medically retired, started doing some high-end VIP and executive protection stuff. Worked pro staff for Aimpoint, since 2007, I think, or 2005 now. It's been a long time. And then moved to Texas, started up HITS, which is a training company here in Dallas with Wayne Dobbs. Wayne and I had known each other for quite a few years, corresponding back and forth. We have very similar backgrounds, but doing a lot of opposite things. So we teach classes together. We have a really good time. And I'm back actually doing security stuff again. So that's kind of it. I just like to shoot, been around a lot of stuff. Always taken a very academic look at a lot of things. And basically sit around and pontificate about stuff I've learned over the years, often the hard way.
Nice. Nice. So I'm trying to think where I want to start. We got like two or three things we definitely want to talk about today. I think the first thing I'll talk about is what is the super test? You guys have got some cool little shooting drills that you either show in class or teach. But the super test is your guys's invention, isn't it?
It's not. Yes and no. Here's what happened. A couple of years ago, we had got back from Wayne and I had gotten back from SHOT Show.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're at SHOT Show, we got to spend a little time with one of our favorite humans on the entire planet, Ken Hackathorn.
Mm-hmm.
Ken has been basically like a hero of mine since I was probably reading Soldier of Fortune at 16 years old. Ken is one of those icons of this industry that is, whether you agree, disagree, whatever, with whatever Ken says, writes, or does, Ken is one of those guys who's absolutely earned a certain level of respect in this industry, and that's we put him pretty high on the pedestal. I have a friend who basically had Army Special Operations way back in the kind of 70s, and said, until Ken Hackathorn started doing some of this stuff with the 1911, he was really the guy who changed a lot.
Right.
And he's one of the, kind of founders and forebearers of a lot of what we do. And one of the best things we ever got from Ken was the test, which is the, we use it as an establishing guideline for anything we do with students. A lot of times, and you can picture it's horribly bad here in Texas with, everybody you run into is, well, I've been shooting my entire life. I'm a hunter. I was in the military. I was this. I'm a cop. I'm, I shoot whatever it is. Everybody can shoot in their mind. And let me quantify. And that's usually a male-dominated thing. So we just sit there and we throw them in the deep end of the pool and go, okay, well, let's shoot a test. Mm-hmm. And it's usually one of the first things we do in classes when we're working with law enforcement. Anything we do is shoot a test, which is 10 rounds, 10 yards, 10 seconds on a B8 bull, repair center.
Right.
And you score it by the rings. And what we find is most people don't do very well on it. If you have a basic grasp of the fundamentals and are a good shooter, you should be able to shoot 90% on a test cold anytime you're asked to do it. That is what we call a good shooter.
Well, before
most people can't.
Well, I was going to say, hold that thought because we got to go to break, and then we'll pick right up. Right now, we're talking with Daryl Bulkey. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters, 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Daryl Bulkey, and before the break, we were talking about the test, and you were saying how with teaching in Texas, especially where you get a lot of the "I've been shooting for all my life" crowd, you'd ask them to do a test, which is 10 rounds in 10 seconds at 10 yards on a B8 repair center, and people weren't doing so well.
No, and we really kind of get that everywhere. But so it gives us a great big evaluation thing. So we love the test. Also, the second Wayne and I step out on a range together to train, the first thing we don't even have to ask, well, what are we going to do first? The first thing we literally do is a test. And what the test does is it tells us what I need to work on the rest of the day. If I biff a test, then I know, if I'm throwing rounds in one place or another or certain issues, I got a pretty good guideline of what I need to work on. I also use it extensively for evaluation of firearms. I've done a bit of gun writing in my day, and if I'm evaluating guns, it's one of those very consistent things I use on evaluating a particular handgun. You have the test, and then you have the half test. And the half test is 10 rounds, 5 yards, 5 seconds. What the test does is the test at 10 yards is a very good evaluation of if you got a solid grasp of the fundamentals and can balance speed and accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it's seeing if you can do. The half test is seeing if you can control recoil while you're doing that. For most high-level competitive shooters, a half test is not a big deal. For most average earth people, cops, soldiers, citizens who are carrying a concealed weapon, the half test is tough, and that half test is shot from the holster. So 10 rounds and 5 seconds from the holster in holding all black is pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
On a basic reality check. So what Wayne and I did is we said, you know what, after talking to Ken, and Ken's getting up there in years, and he's moved to Idaho, he's living a bit of a different lifestyle, he's not as active teaching. As sort of a homage to Ken, because we really kind of want to keep stuff he did in this industry alive, we came up with the super test. And what's happened is over the years, a lot of folks have gotten to understand the test and the half test and are using it. We give it to all of our students. We tell them, if nothing else, use this a lot when you're training. We added a 15-yard stage, and it's 15 yards, and you go 15 yards, 10 rounds, 10 seconds. I'm sorry, 15 yards, 10 rounds, 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And what it basically did is it added a bit of an accuracy component to that. That sort of filled in a bit of a spot on the test and the half test. For some longer distance accuracy, which a lot of people are trying not to do anymore, particularly in the law enforcement world.
Right.
When I started in law enforcement, you would have 50-yard stages of qualification. Then, 25 was pretty accepted. And now a lot of agencies have completely thrown out everything at 25 yards because they can't get people to qualify.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of stuff gone from being accuracy-heavy police qualifications to more combative or more speed-heavy. And it's hard teaching solid marksmanship fundamentals to hit things at 25 yards. And apparently we don't like doing hard things in this world anymore.
Well, you know.
Wayne and I call these no cop left behind qualification courses. So we added this 15-yard component to basically give you enough time to force some solid accuracy work. And so that's the super test. They're all 10 round stages, 15 seconds at 15 yards, 10 seconds at 10 yards, 5 seconds at 5 yards. We added an advanced version in which you shoot the entire thing. Now, the first one, you shoot that all from the ready position.
Right.
The second version, the advanced version, you shoot the entire thing from the holster. And that adds a bit of component. And the guys, you know, people like you and some of the other trainers out there and stuff are really liking that advanced version because it really kind of shows a solid anchoring of everything. You know, your draw stroke, you're running your shooting systems, your concealment system or outside the waistband, doesn't matter. You know, make sure you're running a good belt. Make sure you're going to, it's a good way to check your gear, your gear placement, and the firearm you're using on how well you do on that. Now, if you can shoot a 290 on the super test, you are getting into some serious, we call those serious pistolero mastered fundamentals of the pistol.
Right.
If you're shooting a 270, you're a really good shooter.
Right.
That is a serious, solid, well-developed shooter. And if you're not, it gives you something to work to.
Yeah.
I notice a lot of guys are out there. I've watched Wayne, I think, one or maybe two times shoot a 300 on it. If I can get over 290, I'm a happy camper. I seem to always be kind of the king of the 289. And that usually it's that 15-yard stage just kills me. It's a good way to gauge yourself and evaluate what you're doing. We've got a revolver version of it. We've got a snub version. And most of that's up on our Facebook. And if you want, I can probably send those to you later.
Yeah.
And you can probably put them up on your Facebook.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we don't Facebook like most instructors do on social media. We're absolutely terrible at it. Wayne and I both hate it.
Well, it's because I wasn't going to say it's because you're old, but I mean.
We are. We're dinosaurs.
It's all right.
And you know what's funny? My daughter says, well, Facebook's for old people.
Huh.
And I'm older than the old people she's referring to.
I was at a Walmart the other day, a couple weeks ago, and I don't remember what for, but we were at the electronics checkout, and somebody asked about what kind of phone I had, and I've got an iPhone, and they're like, "Oh, do you like it?" I'm like, "Yeah, you know," and I like being able to use iMovie to edit movies. And this kid looks at me and he goes, "Yeah, my dad likes to use iMovie to do stuff too," and I'm like, "I will end you. I will end you right here."
The kids are on a different program.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I've just had to learn to accept it.
It's okay.
It's a world I don't understand. I'm just going to hide in the house now and I'll be safe.
As far as the super test where you run all three, one of the reasons I like it when I've gotten to run it is it really forces consistency and mental consistency more than anything because it's really easy to feel like you've gotten behind and try and maybe shoot faster than you should be.
We run tests on people who don't know really what they're doing on this stuff. And the one thing you see is bam, 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 bam. And you'll watch that cadence on the shots come up and they're panicking over time.
Yeah.
Because they don't have that level of consistency to shoot to some level of a pace. You know, you get to a stage in this and you're certainly there. Shoot me under the table anytime we're around each other. That's because you actually go out and shoot as opposed to a real job. I had to get that in because, you know, my job is to shoot and talk about it on the radio.
Yeah.
It is pretty cool. That's a jealousy thing. That's not throwing you under a bus or anything.
No, you can throw me under the bus, Wayne. I deserve it.
Well, no, I'm Daryl. Wayne's back in the bus.
Oh, jeez.
He'll get
coffee.
You
too, oh, my God. Well. I need it.
I told you that we should have gotten coffee.
It's my fault. Well, and see, the nice thing is, like, we get to go to commercial break right meow, and then, like, when we come back, we can pretend like I didn't do that. How's that sound?
Okay.
That sounds perfect. Good. So we're talking with Daryl, not Wayne, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen sidekick to the 500 lumen X300 Ultra M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, "Aziz, light!" ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now, as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 30% off everything at the Surefire.com web store except suppressors and batteries by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS. That is ALLTHELUMENS. So, we're talking with Daryl Bulkey, who is not Wayne Dobbs, and I haven't called someone the wrong name on the air in a while, so I apologize.
It doesn't matter. It happens all the time. That's what happens when you're partners. And that's spelled P-A-R-D-N-E-R-S, like in Texas versus partners. Other states.
Ah.
Yeah. We're partners.
So let me ask you this. We got two segments left, and I want to talk about one thing each segment. I know when you were, because you and I have spoken about this a lot offline, I know when you were training cops and even now, that you're a pretty big proponent of the failure drill, which, for those that don't know, is you fired a couple of shots, two or three or four, depending on how you teach it, to the high center mass of a target. You evaluate, and if those rounds were not effective, then you switch targeting area, usually to a ocular window. Talk about why that's a thing and why you were training people, and how effective was it in real life?
Okay, so I did not invent this
by
any stretch. I stole this with permission from the guys at LAPD D-Platoon. Particularly give credit to Larry Mudgett, John Helms, and Scott Reed, who I was working with pretty extensively over the years. Those guys got it from Gunsight, and it was originally called a Mozambique for an incident that had happened in Africa, in which two rounds were fired, the gun brought back to the ready. If the target doesn't go down, come back up and fire a single round to the head, which was beautiful about the old Gunsight of the early era is they had some – there weren't like a whole lot of shooting schools back then.
Right.
You know, there was one. And they had such a good basis of people coming from around the country to Gunsight from very different backgrounds and would take what they learned from Gunsight and go back to their original places and start trying this stuff. Well, what the guys at L.A. found was, particularly on those failure drills, is bringing the gun back to the ready and assessing was not really a realistic component on the street.
Right.
So they would train to fire a controlled pair to the body, and then immediately transition to a single brain shot. And the reason it's called a failure drill is if the first two rounds going into a high center chest area, and this is something Wayne and I are kind of deaf on, and it's been my big thing in the industry right now. We hear the terms acceptable accuracy a lot. Or acceptable target. Here's your acceptable target. Yeah, actually it is. And it's about the size of a large orange, small grapefruit in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not hitting that on human beings, they tend to accept getting hit with pistol bullets really well and continue fighting.
Right.
If you're not hitting that level, that's why we use 5.5-inch bulls as the targets at our school. They're stapled up to silhouette targets, but it's a 5.5-inch bull to sort of simulate that area that you really have to put rounds in. If those body shots don't work into that high level demand accuracy area, then something's wrong. Something's wrong with either they are just not impressed with you shooting them, They are high on any one of a number of prescription or non-prescription pharmaceuticals that will is preventing them from reacting properly to being shot. You have not hit properly, or they're just angry and mad and pissed off enough to not go down. And this happens. The right. one thing we don't see people not go down to is headshots. And we had multiples of these at my agency after we started training these. And some of them did not enter the skull as far as either they wrapped around, they hit a little low, whatever. But what we did see on every single one is when you hit people in the head with pistol bullets, they tend to go down like you've cut the string on a marionette. And it doesn't necessarily mean they're dead. It necessarily means it puts them right now on the deck, and now we can really evaluate what we have.
Right.
If that fight is over or not. And the it works spectacularly well that I have seen the guys at L.A. had huge success with it. And when I brought it back to my agency with my people, we had huge success with it. And I'm going to tell you kind of what it does. By training this all the time, where you are constantly doing this over and over, mass repetitive, every time you're on a range, every time you fire a string of ammunition in any kind of setting, and you're using a failure drill, always, you're always finishing with that precision headshot. You're always working that hard, controlled pair into the body. What we find is that becomes a front-loaded computer program. It's like a shortcut on your computer. That yeah. is loaded up in the front of your brain that you now really don't have to think about it when the flag goes up and you're in the middle of a force confrontation. It lets your brain work on problem solving and not shooting, because that's a pre-wired program. My guys were not particularly good shooters. They were your typical average Joe cops. And even the SWAT guys, even though it says SWAT on their little thing, they tend to be good cops who are in pretty good shape. Being on SWAT does not necessarily make you an incredibly wonderful shooter. They still have to work at it.
Right.
Do we tend to hold them to a little bit higher demands? Absolutely. But being on SWAT is more about working in a team environment than you're there because you shoot so much better than everybody else. So my guys were normal dudes. It was a part-time team. So they were called out of whatever their other duties, and most of them worked patrol. Most of what we taught them on SWAT with these failure drills were actually employed in the patrol environment. And what ended up happening is my guys started doing this stuff on a fairly regular basis. And what we saw was they would fire two rounds or less in most shootings or go straight to the head. We had a couple hostage shootings and things like that where they went straight to a headshot. Or we had some absolutely textbook failure drills done where it was a couple rounds to the body, no reaction or improper reaction from the crook, and immediately transition to a headshot and put him down. Here's the big picture thing we got out of that. A, the guys were able to do it remote controlly at a subconscious level, which is what we had hoped for. B, what happened is our shootings ended up being much better because they were using far less rounds for two reasons. They were using far less rounds and shootings because we had a high accuracy demand on those initial rounds going into the chest. It wasn't you get to shoot an entire gigantic no cop left behind silhouette. You have to put rounds into a very small area, the first two. And if they don't react to that, it comes into the headshot, which is also a precision shot. So we had very low round count shootings. In today's law enforcement environment, do you think having very low round count shootings is a good thing? I was working in Southern California. We are home to the silly appeals court.
Right.
All those court decisions, everybody goes, are you kidding? The most overturned court in the country? Yeah, that was ours.
Yeah.
That's where our cases ended up. And in one of the most litigious societies in the country. And we didn't get sued on one, two, or three round shootings.
Well,
that was the biggest thing we noticed is like nobody sues us anymore.
See,
because it's like guy produced a gun and he got shot twice, you know, and it was done, or once or three times at max. And that was it. It was over and done with. It's when you start getting into these 17-round shootings, whether, and I'm not saying they're bad shootings, or we can't explain them, but the public doesn't understand them.
Right. And I love you so hard right now. I can't even tell you. And I'll later today, I'll tell you why off air, but you made me so happy.
Good. Making you happy. My day is complete.
Perfect. We have to go to break again, man. We're talking with Daryl Bulkey. You're listening to Ballistic Radio.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. So we're talking with Daryl Bulkey, who is awesome and amazing and my favorite human being ever because he just made the internet sad, and I am totally okay with that. So before the break, we were talking about failure drills. I kind of want to transition to something else, like a failure drill. See, transition. Ha.
Ba-dum-tsh.
No, that was not a good. That was not a good joke. But I kind of want to talk about triggers for social use guns. You've written a couple of articles about that. And we got like 10 minutes left in the show or so. So, as far as you're concerned, Daryl, is a heavier trigger and I'm going to do quotation marks around it, a safer trigger, or is there something else that we should be considering?
No, they're not safer.
Yeah.
The whole idea of a safe trigger is one of those oxymorons, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, that's the thing that initiates the dangerous part on these guns. It's not the I started in the days of, the 12-pound double-action revolver trigger. And I'm just going to say this right now because a lot of what I write gets taken wrong by people. And I don't know if it's I'm a literary failure, people are a failure to read. But it's, the world of the internet that drives me nuts. It really comes down to that trigger is initiating the end. And throw all the competition recreational shooting out of this. I am only speaking of problem solving and social, solving an interpersonal force problem or a lethal force problem. Okay, in that context, that trigger is the end of the problem. That is initiating when you are going to absolute execution of lethal force. And it has to do a lot of things. If you do stupid, unsafe gun handling and violate safety rules, you're going to have a negligent discharge with everything. I don't care what trigger you put in the gun.
Right.
You run around with a finger on the trigger, and certain things can happen, whether it's an overload from one hand to the other, it's a falling type of thing where you're falling backwards and grabbing at stuff, whether it's a surprise, a shock, whatever, you're going to discharge around. I don't care what trigger you put in the gun or what weight of the trigger you put in the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll clear that right now. Triggers do not prevent negligent discharges from doing stupid things.
Right.
So we'll go right there. That's why Wayne and I spend a ton of time on safety. Our safety brief is well known. It's about 45 minutes to an hour, which is not how everybody else has done, because that's we take it that seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So what triggers do is triggers initiate ammunition being turned into a bullet that is now leaving the gun. And that is part of a threat problem. And how does the trigger factor in that? I teach a thing I stole from an old Delta guy named Gene Zink, and I refined it quite a bit over the year. I liked it because it was simple, called SEE, see, evaluate, eliminate. And in any problem we end up with, you have to see the problem or use your senses to define that I have a threat. You need to evaluate that threat, and then you need to eliminate that threat. Now, elimination can be anything from presence, verbal, being scary, whatever, to some level of force to shooting. I mean, there's a lot of ways to eliminate threat. We use firearms and fire rounds to fully eliminate lethal force level threats. In certain contexts, if you are in a full boat conventional military conflict, how much threat evaluation do you have to do? Like almost none. It's like everybody over there can be shot because they're on the bad people's side. Most homeowners actually get a fairly good pass on this. If it's 3 o'clock in the morning in your home and you hear the window break and some terrible thing, and then a human appears that is not one of your family, that's pretty much a good to go shooting thing. There's not a whole lot of threat evaluation that's going on there. For police officers and citizens carrying outside their home, cops have insane level of threat evaluation that has to be done before a shot's fired. Almost past what most normal people, any level of expectation. The standards we're holding law enforcement to are often insane, that people who should have been shot a long time ago are not, because they're holding to that evaluation level so long. Citizens have a huge expectation of before they're firing rounds off at shopping mall, ATM, whatever, they have to do some pretty extensive threat evaluation. What certain triggers do is when you're at the end of that evaluation process, you then initiate a shot if it becomes a lethal force situation. Some triggers are very good for shooting, and some triggers are very good for not shooting.
Right.
So what are you trying to do? And now you need to sort of match that. And then once, if you have a very good shooting trigger, you know what you have to be very good at? Knowing when to use it. If you have a very good not shooting trigger, it gives you more time in that evaluation process, but you're going to now have to make – it will give you a chance to make some mistakes in the evaluation process. And help with those judgment errors, or right, give you a little bit more forgiving of that, where a very good trigger is more forgiving of marksmanship errors.
Right.
Now we have to balance that, and all of these triggers are good. I've used all of them in police worker or this type of thing extensively, all the way from 1911s to double action revolvers and everything in between. So I have some level of, I'm not just, this is not one of my favorite internet terms of what I would do is, which means I've never done this before and I have a theory.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I have had people at the end of guns with everything you can imagine trigger-wise. For me personally, the two triggers I really like for managing people extensively, like all the time at the end of a pistol, is a double action or LEM trigger,
mm-hmm,
or something similar to either.
Right.
Because what you get to do with those is while you are into the elimination phase of actually pressing that trigger, you can still evaluate. Because the way your mind warps during these incidents, believe me, it's hard to explain. And the way I tell most people that they can relate to is being in a surprise car accident and how everything's moving slow. Most of the time you can't really see an airbag deploy. I can tell you firsthand it deploys in slow motion when you're actually sitting in the car.
Right.
So this is very much the same thing. So I have had multiple situations where I have made a absolute 100% decision to shoot. And during the course of a trigger press, the speed of that press is usually in those cases, a couple yard trigger press speed,
right,
which is fairly fast. The situation changed enough that I was able to observe and come off that trigger and not shoot. Could we have explained those shootings, every one of them, as being a good shoot? Absolutely. Every single one of those situations, I could have fired the round and not been prosecuted, but maybe questioned.
Right.
In this case, there's five people who did not get shot at minimum, and maybe more, but I can distinctly think of five that all should have gotten shot. Am I happier to have not been in five more shootings than I already have been? Absolutely.
Yep.
And those were the result in several of them, because with a double action trigger, I could actually visually see my hammer coming back. I knew I was getting ready to make a shot. The other thing is things with hammers, you can see your trigger press visually because your sight, your visual acuity goes through the roof. Your tactile ability goes out the window in these incidents. I can tell you right now, you are not going to feel how heavy your trigger is in one of these incidents. What you will do is you will perceive movement, which is why I really like the HK's LEM trigger, because it's all movement, no momentum, and no particular feel. But there's a lot of movement going on, and you're actually seeing a hammer with it. DA triggers are tough to master. I tell people, if you can shoot a double-action revolver, you can shoot.
Yeah.
That's how you teach people to shoot. If you can really master a DA revolver, you've really got something going.
Yep.
People in our world today who have never been exposed to that, who have shot like nothing but a good striker trigger their entire lives, may have a trigger that, because it's a good marksmanship trigger, that's helping them out a lot.
Yeah.
That they're not as good as they think they are when they get off of those triggers. If you can learn on a DA gun, you're doing something. What I like about DASA guns is those are very good for handling a problem-solving. It's got a problem-solving trigger when you need a problem-solving trigger and a great trigger when you need a shooting trigger.
Right.
So that first shot, while you're still doing all this evaluation, that's problem-solving and figuring out what's going on in the middle of chaos, that's when the DA trigger is. And then you transit. Once you fired the first round, you're now in a shooting.
Yeah.
And then it goes to a great marksmanship trigger. And a lot of people are coming back to figuring out that, wow, we had those DASA guns in the old days, and they sucked because we really didn't know how to run them.
Yep.
And now you've got some serious, you know, the Ben Stogers, the, Ernest Langdons, you know, Todd Green, and all these people who shoot fantastically well with a DASA trigger and going, oh, actually, you can run those really good.
Yep.
So those got some real plus. Now, people look at me like with competition. I've now become like the anti-striker fired guy for some reason, and I'm really not. I care. I mean, I've shot over like 300,000 rounds for various Glock 9mm. Carried one on duty for extensive amount of time. It's not like I'm anti-Glock or safe action or striker guy. And I'm pretty well known for. I'm the VP9 guy.
Right.
I love striker guns. Striker guns I shoot better with. I'm just going to tell you, if I have to go out and shoot a shooting something or other, I'm probably going to pick up a VP9 at this point. It fixes a lot for me. They're good shooting triggers. I think we've gotten to the point of we're trying to make them way too good, but, you know, that's just me being curmudgeon-y. But a good, solid, predictable striker trigger, there's nothing wrong with them, but here's what you're going to get. There's not a lot of movement going on there. So if you get on that trigger in a force incident, you better be right, because you don't have as much time on that trigger. You don't have as much feel on that trigger, and you're not getting visual input of a hammer moving. So what tends to happen, and I relate this to two of the shootings I was in with a shotgun, is you make a decision to shoot, and the shot goes off.
Right.
It doesn't – I mean, there's no real particular thing going on where you're having all this other stuff. It's just you make a decision – and the shot goes off. Is that good? Yes. Can it be bad? Yes. Just realize what you're kind of getting into with all of these. They are not very forgiving of trigger checks. And we have a lot of people who trigger check.
Well, and I'm sorry to interrupt, because we're right at the end of the show. I guess the thing, and you can answer real quick, is just that people think that, you know, trigger weight is what gives you more time to process information. And you're saying it's the trigger travel that's important to give
yes.
you just that split second extra time to make good choices.
Right. Or to correct a bad choice.
Perfect.
Let me add really quick, because I know you're at the end. It will also give you a little bit of time to correct some marksmanship errors.
True. And that's my experience as well. Daryl, I appreciate you taking time out of your day, man. If people want to find you, hardwiredtacticalshooting.com?
We don't have a web person, so I would go with Hardwired Tactical Shooting at Facebook.
Perfect.
We don't update it often, but that's where all the classes are.
Perfect. Man, I really appreciate it. It was good talking to you, brother.
No problem. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Hey, be safe.
Bye, Melody.
Bye, Daryl.
So make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.